his is. The lust it commands, the blood on your hands. Abandoned Vampire AU, written by Her Love Was a Joke, and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated R. Contains the pairings Ryan Ross, Brendan Urie, Frank Iero, Gerard Way, and Pete Wentz, Patrick Stump. This story is the third story in the Screaming Down the Starlit Sky universe. For more information about author's notes and the warnings, please check out the introduction post on my journal. He was supposed to have been rescued. He'd been pulled from the mob, away from the hurt and fear and betrayal. He was supposed to be safe now. It was a mistaken assumption. Rough hands on his shoulders dug painful bruises, even through the layers of his shirt and threadbare jacket. He tried to twist away, but the tendons in his shoulders screamed in protest, stopping him short. He did his best to ignore them, to ignore the pain and focus only on the screaming in his head, the voice telling him to get away no matter what the cost. He felt the joint in his shoulder give. He cried out, kicking with his left leg and catching nothing but air as he thrashed uselessly. He'd already had so much taken out of him that his struggles were weak. Nothing at all compared to the years of training he'd undergone, hours of sparring and fighting until muscle memory could be trusted to save him. It wouldn't today. He knew that. Could feel it in his aching body. "Why?" he asked, drawing out the word as he tried to bring his knees up. "Why?" He knew there was no answer to give, none to expect. Hands fisted in his hair, drawing his head to the side, exposing his neck. He held his breath, tried not to whimper. There was no neat sting of teeth on his neck this time, no hands cradling his jaw, lips dragging along the thin skin over the pulse point. There was no sigh, no press of a tongue to overheated flesh, no whisper of his name. There was only his throat being ripped open. Suddenly, the screaming wasn't just in his head anymore. Ryan bolted upright, hands pressed against his mouth, holding his own scream inside. He sat there for long moments, afraid to move a muscle, unsure if he could keep quiet, even now that the weariness of fatigue was settling in, telling him that he was awake now, that it had only been another dream. He laughed a little, a hysterical sound bubbling up inside him, muffled by his sweaty palms. "Only a dream." That made it sound so simple, so harmless. It had been 5 days since he last slept for more than 30 minutes at a time. 8 since he'd started waking with a scream on his lips and a tremor in his limbs. It was never the same dream. Sometimes he dreamed about the guy he couldn't see, the one fighting for his life. Now and then, all he saw was red and orange. All he felt was the incredible heat of a raging fire. Other times, all he could remember was an overwhelming loneliness, a sadness and frustration. He had no idea what it could possibly mean, but he knew it was all connected. Something was coming. Ryan liked to think he'd have figured that out even without Brendan's warning. After all, he'd figured out pretty damn quickly that his dreams weren't normal. At first, he thought it was just stupid deja vu. Everyone got that at some point, and really, it wasn't like his life was so interesting that he found himself in completely new situations every day. So, when a customer came into the store and Ryan was able to hand her a crisp copy of Life of Pi before she'd even opened her mouth, or when he knew that Spencer was going to leave his history text in the cafeteria, it wasn't a big deal. When he recognized the face of a missing girl in the newspaper and knew exactly which vampire gang had killed her, it stopped being quite so harmless. And then, of course, those nightmares started. The ones that had him fighting to stay awake, going through his days in an exhausted haze, twitchy from lack of sleep. Ryan wasn't sure if Brendan's disappearing act made things better or worse. On one hand, he'd have loved the chance to ask a few pointed questions. He wouldn't even try to use his fist, and only a little because he knew it was useless. On the other, how safe, how smart was it to have a vampire around anyway? Especially one who had access to his apartment? That thought caused Ryan's eyes to drift toward his open bedroom door, down what little he could see of the hallway that led toward the bathroom. He'd leaned over the sink there, spat and rinsed his mouth, all the while trying to stop his hands from trembling. Brendan had pressed up against him there, touched him, talking all the while about things he had no right to comment on. So what if it had been a while for Ryan? So what if he was a little desperate and kind of lonely? It wasn't right to bring it up. He was still in high school, for Christ's sake. Like he was going to turn down a hand job when he had all that warmth at his back. Especially when he could still feel Brendan in his mouth, lips swollen, tingling, throat still sore. Ryan moaned softly at the memory, his hand skirting across his stomach tiredly. God, he couldn't even do anything about it. Rolling over onto his side and stuffing his hands under the pillow, more to stop them from trying than for comfort. He stared at the far wall and came to a conclusion. He was going to have to find Brendan. He needed to know what the hell the vampire's blood had done. He brought his laptop to work with him the next afternoon, plugging it into the lines intended for the main terminal at the cash desk. That he was asked to special order a book anyway, so he didn't anticipate having to crawl under the counter to hook the ancient desktop back up. Maybe it was stupid to do his internet searches where anyone could lean over and look, but Ryan was pretty sure he could laugh it off, put on his best fake smile, and say he was writing a short story or something for his English class. He had lost track of the number of aspiring novelists he'd met during the 6 months he'd worked at Elliott Books. If he was into conspiracy theories, he might have worried about his search terms. But this was real life, not a made-for-TV movie. Holy shit, Ryan thought. When the hell had searching for vampires become normal? It was a quiet evening, with only a few regulars to serve, so Ryan was able to spend most of his shift leaning against the countertop, typing in as many different word combinations into Google as possible. When that didn't bring up anything useful. Really, how much vampire porn was there on the internet? He took a moment to stretch the tired muscles in his back. His hands reached high above his head as he raised one hip, trying to crack the joint. The burn felt good, momentarily distracting him from the fogginess of his thoughts, the small headache that had been buzzing just behind his left eyebrow for most of the day. With a sigh, he tried to figure out a smarter way to go about his search. Google was unhelpful, even when he tried to narrow his search to his city. He didn't have time to hit the library and pore over old microfiche or whatever they did in the movies. His best bet would, no doubt, be the website for the public archives. There, he could access all recent newspapers and news periodicals. He'd also have access to quite a lot of older publications and articles, thanks to the city's 2-year-old archival project. It would mean quite a bit of work. But there was still 3 hours left in his shift, and he could stay late if he needed to. He had the key to the front door, after all. Ryan brought up the website and set to work. It took a while. The archives database was hardly user-friendly. But after an hour and a half and almost 20 discarded search terms, he finally found something useful. It was a series of articles about people who'd gone missing on the east side of town. As Ryan scrolled through story after story, he felt a twinge in his stomach. How had he not noticed the regularity with which people disappeared? How had this not been the top story on every nightly news program? What the fuck was wrong with the people living in this city? Ryan wondered, with a growing sense of horror. He reached for the pencil and message pad next to the phone and began making a list of the common elements in each news story. Within 20 minutes, he'd circled 3 locations, the last one so viciously that his pencil tore through the paper. Ryan's shift was over at 9, and within 10 minutes he'd managed to do a half-assed cleanup, the bare minimum he could get away with when Mrs. Elliot was opening the next morning, and gather his stuff from behind the front counter. He locked the door behind him and hefted his backpack from where he dropped it on the sidewalk. His back was sore, no doubt from spending the previous night curled up around his pillow and the last few hours hunched over his laptop. He tried to ignore the twinges as he shrugged into the straps of his bag and set off for the bus stop, patting the ripped piece of paper in his pocket. This was probably the worst idea he'd ever had, Ryan knew. For a second, he wondered if he should maybe write something down, some letter for Spencer explaining what had happened, or at least where he was going. He didn't want to end up in one of the articles on the archive's website, the ones that said things like, "No one knew where he was heading that night," or, "Friends say his behavior was out of character." Ryan was already reaching for his backpack, intent on finding a pen and paper, when he realized what he was doing and forced himself to stop. There was no point. Spencer wouldn't believe the truth, and even if he did, Ryan had no way of getting the letter to him. It was kind of counterproductive to keep it in his pocket. Instead, he reached into his jeans and pulled out his bus pass, watching as the bus headlights cut through the darkness as it turned the corner and slowly made its way toward him. It was a fairly long ride to the old warehouse on the east side of town. Ryan yawned loudly and pressed his forehead against the cool glass of the window in an effort to stay awake. It was a Monday, and he'd put in a full day of school before his 6-hour shift. By all rights, he should have been at home, in bed. But even the thought of sleep made his stomach churn. The bus jerked sharply as the driver suddenly hit the brakes, throwing Ryan forward. His hands scrabbled against the back of the seat in front of him in an effort to stop his forward momentum. "Fuck," he muttered, glaring at the back of the driver's head, wishing the old man would turn around so he'd get the full effect. He didn't, though, but that didn't stop Ryan from continuing to throw him dark looks for the rest of his ride. The bus let him off 10 minutes from the warehouse. Ryan ducked his head and slipped his hands into the pockets of his light spring jacket as he made his way down the street. He walked quickly, and it wasn't long before he heard the faint strains of music. The warehouse had, at one time, housed Simcoe paper products. It was mostly abandoned now, except for when the son of the Simcoe's elderly owner used it to throw parties. Which, if Ryan's search was correct, happened quite often. His searches had also turned up a pattern of missing people in the surrounding neighborhoods on party nights, though it rarely, suspiciously, made the news. Ryan came face to face with the reason, as soon as he slipped a 10 to the guy on the door and made his way inside. He only narrowly managed to avoid walking into a punk who was leading a confused young woman toward the door. Ryan stopped in his tracks, holding his breath, not daring to move a muscle. He knew it was stupid. The only way to get away from a vampire was to fucking run, not to freeze like a deer in the headlights, heart pounding so hard Ryan was afraid it would claw its way out of his chest. The vampire looked at him sharply, making a face as though he'd smelled something particularly offensive. "Dandy," he'd muttered, sliding his eyes away from Ryan's face. He gave Ryan a wide berth, tugging the woman along behind him, taking care to keep her well out of the boy's reach. Ryan watched with wide eyes as the vampire disappeared outside, the woman he towed behind him stumbling as she tried to keep up. Belatedly, Ryan reached out for her, his fingers closing on thin air as she was pulled away. He made to go after her, needing to do something before he remembered the last time he'd tried to save some poor girl. He doubted that Pete and Patrick would be around to save him tonight. With a silent apology, Ryan turned away from the door and began to push his way through the crowd. He didn't know anyone there, which was equally good and bad. On one hand, he wouldn't have to worry about any of his friends getting hurt. On the other, he was completely alone if something bad happened. Ryan thought back to the party at Dustin's and clenched his jaw. This was different, he knew. There weren't enough missing people for the warehouse parties to be connected, but it was obvious that any gathering of humans was going to be considered a good hunting ground. He tried not to think about it. Seeing another vampire from the corner of his eye, one of the hoods this time, Ryan ducked down behind a huge guy twice his size. He watched as the vampire continued on his way, eyes scanning the humans as an unhappy look darkened his face. Ryan watched as he left, twisting his head uncomfortably as he was shuffled forward by the crowd. Finally, he let it go, turning back to face the right direction as he stopped fighting his forward momentum. He eventually made his way toward the far wall, taking a moment to breathe in a deep lungful of hot, stale air. He resettled his backpack on his shoulders and was about to push off the wall when he saw them. A collection of well-dressed vampires, their white hats standing out in the crowd. They were clustered against the adjoining wall, maybe 20 feet away. There were four of them, Brendan and two others, standing very close to the vampire Ryan had met after Dustin's party. The one he'd hidden from, his mind corrected. Beckett, he thought the name was. Ryan had no idea who the other two were. He didn't particularly want to know either. It was obvious by their stance that they were keeping watch for something. Even if Ryan hadn't known that Beckett was something important for the Dandies, he would have seen it just from the way the other three stood near him, eyes shifting over the crowd, searching for potential threats as they kept bored, uninterested looks on their faces. "Something's coming," Brendan had told him. "It means you'll need protection." He'd had a serious look on his face when he said it, demanded that Ryan just accept it already. He'd been pretty damn serious about it all, had even given Ryan permission to fight him on anything else he might want in the future. Still, hearing about something and actually seeing it were two very different things. In that moment, Ryan realized that, deep down, he'd doubted the story, figured Brendan made it up as an easy way to scare him. It was the kind of thing a vampire would do, and Brendan was hardly a shining example of take no for an answer. But as Ryan watched closely, He could make out the tension in the vampire's shoulders, the quick way his eyes touched over the assembled people, the way he inched incrementally closer to Beckett. He was uncomfortable being there, out in the open where anyone could cause trouble. And there Ryan was, trying to get in the middle of it. Not that he knew how exactly to go about it. He supposed he could just walk up to Brendan and demand an answer for what was happening to him. After all, that punk had seemed to recognize him as being marked. So maybe the other dandies wouldn't hurt him. That, of course, said nothing for Brendan. Ryan doubted he'd be happy at being interrupted by a slightly hysterical human boy. Ryan hardly made a suitable accessory in his current state. He stood there dumbly, staring at the vampires as he racked his foggy brain for something, anything that might resemble a plan. Why hadn't he let himself think farther ahead than this? Ryan didn't think he'd expected to actually succeed. Not on the first try, anyway. He was still staring when Brendan suddenly turned and looked straight at him. He wasn't spotted by accident. The smooth, fast motion of Brendan's neck as he turned to face Ryan proved that well enough. He'd known exactly where Ryan was standing, exactly how far to the left he had to lean in order to see over the crowd. Ryan stared back with wide eyes. "Blood calls to blood," Brendan had said. Had Brendan known he was coming? Had he known the minute Ryan stepped into the warehouse? The thought was unsettling. Ryan opened his mouth to speak, even though there was little chance Brendan would hear him. His words, whatever they were going to be, stuck in his throat when Brendan gave a small, nearly imperceptible shake of his head before turning his attention back to the others with him. Ryan sagged back against the wall and closed his eyes against the sting of frustration. If Brendan had his way, he'd never visit the bridge on the east edge of town. It was old, and more than likely structurally unsound, no matter what the human engineers had to say in the matter. It spanned the river, carrying cars and pedestrians from one muddy bank to the other, rough, dirty water swirling below, breaking on half-submerged rocks and garbage. It stank. Brendan couldn't help but wrinkle his nose as the wind changed, and he was hit full-on with the stench of trash, fetid water, and unwashed humans. There was a large contingent of the city's homeless living on the shores of the river, and while it was a good place to grab a quick meal if a vampire were desperate enough to need it, it still made Brendan's skin crawl. He'd have to burn his clothes later. There was no way the cleaners would be able to get the smell completely out of the fabric. Pity. He really liked the pinstripes he was currently wearing. He stuck his hands in the pockets of his jacket and moved a fraction of an inch closer to Beckett. The other vampire looked no different than he usually did, but Brendan was smart enough to notice the slight tension in his shoulders, invisible to anyone who didn't know him well enough. Brendan had spent his entire vampire life at Beckett's side, had been counted an important ally since he'd first discovered his talent for mesmerism. Brendan took pride in that connection, and in his ability to read Beckett's moods and intervene if necessary. Brendan scanned the darkness behind Beckett's left shoulder, having to crane his neck a little in order to see around Cardin and the butcher, who were standing on Beckett's other side. There was no sign of trouble, but that didn't mean much. Gerard had been strangely silent since his arrival over a week ago. His incredible patience was serving him well, having gotten most of the area's dandies worked up without even lifting a finger. Their fears weren't baseless, though. Patience aside, Gerard wasn't going to wait forever. There had to be some sort of plan, and Brendan wasn't comfortable out in the open, not when he was still so unsure of how the threat was going to be carried out. He'd have much rather kept Beckett inside until they'd figured out exactly what Gerard and his associates were after. Beckett would have none of it, so Brendan hadn't even bothered to bring it up. He thought that maybe John Walker had approached him about it, maybe even with the butcher's help. They were both far bolder than Brendan was, and could probably get away with making the suggestion. One way or the other, Beckett's decision had been made, and his schedule remained much the same as it always did. If each meeting or visit was slightly shorter, well, Brendan wasn't about to point it out. "He's coming back," Barton said. Brendan watched as the other vampire slowly made his way toward them, his face set in a grim line. That was unusual for John Walker, whose steady reactions the others had come to depend on, whether they were willing to admit it or not. Even after much study, Brendan wasn't sure whether John really was as difficult to agitate as he led them to believe, or if he was simply a master at projecting a calm exterior. There were certainly advantages to either option. Whether his current reaction was due to prolonged exposure to the homeless man he'd pressed for information, or from the information itself, Brendan wasn't sure. He hoped it was something as simple as the stench. He didn't know how he'd deal with the alternative. "It's not good," John said, when he was close enough that his voice wouldn't carry over to any unwanted eavesdroppers. "This evening's shipment was intercepted. It seems your police officers were diverted elsewhere, and there was no one to protect it as it was unloaded." "So you're telling me that my merchandise is gone?" Beckett asked, his voice flat and unimpressed. Later, Brendan knew, there would be overt anger, yelling, violence. It would not be pretty. Which gang was it? Whose safe houses are we burning to the ground, John Walker? There was a glint in his eyes, a crazy kind of anger that, had it been directed at him, would have made Brendan shudder. "It was humans," John replied, his mouth twisting at the thought. "I thought we'd dealt with the Mafia before you sent me and Butcher to Maya." "We did," Beckett replied. "They're apparently too stupid for their own good. They'll have to be taught the same lesson twice." "Was it just the humans, then?" Brendan asked. Having human interference in dandy shipments was bad, but it could easily be dealt with. It should be nothing to get the property back, have it continue on its way, and keep the dandy economy thriving. "No," John replied. "Gerard, or someone matching his description."
"A Gerard?"
Beckett said impatiently. "Gerard," John nodded, was seen at the docks, along with his two associates. Now, having them lend help to the upstarts, or even encouraging their stupidity, is bad enough, but there's more than that. At one point, one of the humans got mouthy, and the blonde one intervened." There was a pause as John tried to find the best way to phrase his next comment. Beckett didn't appreciate being made to wait. "Spit it out, John," he said, taking half a step forward. "I think he's Gabriel's Deimos," John replied, though he didn't seem all that fazed by Beckett's bad mood. "It's not hard for one of us to scare some delicate little human, but from the description, he was able to draw it out, to find exactly what would terrify this man, all in the blink of an eye."
"He could just be able to read their thoughts," Butcher pointed out.
"That wouldn't account for the gibbering mess this human was reduced to,
Not in the time it took to do it. We have to face facts, John said. Gerard is here with one of Gabriel's closest and most important allies. Gabriel could very well have sent him. That was a sobering thought. Brendan looked at the others and tried to gauge the reactions, but their faces had all gone carefully blank. If Gabriel was behind Gerard's visit, things were worse than they'd thought. Brendan couldn't remember, from any of the stories he'd been told, a time when the leader of one city had so blatantly made a play against another. Bad blood between gangs was one thing, but Gabriel and Beckett were dandies both. Always looking for allies in time of need, they'd sent envoys back and forth as far back as anyone could remember. It just didn't add up, not with what Brendan knew about Gabriel. I really don't think that Gabe is the one we need to worry about, Brendan said carefully. He took a deep breath and tried to give voice to the jumbled thoughts floating around inside his head. We still don't know what the hell he's after, for one. If Gerard had Gabriel's blessing, we'd already know what was going on because it would be over by now. Whatever Gerard's doing, he's doing it on his own. You have a point, Beckett said with a nod. He reached out and adjusted Brendan's tie, a sign of affection he rarely bestowed in public. Secondly, Brendan continued, his confidence bolstered by Beckett's reaction. Gabriel is smart. I've never met him, but his reputation precedes him. He has to know that fighting amongst ourselves is only going to give the other gangs a foothold in both our cities. We keep violence away from home. That's how we've managed to stay in control. What could possibly be worth that? There's no way Gerard left the city without telling Gabriel first, Carden pointed out. Not if he brought Briar with him. They were still guessing as to the blonde's identity. Nothing could be sure until they all came face to face again and demanded answers. But one name was as good as another given the circumstances. True, Butcher said after a moment. But knowing he's leaving isn't the same thing as sending him. Which brings us back to the beginning, John said. What the fuck does he want? Something he's relatively sure he can get, Beckett mused. I know Gerard. He wouldn't be here unless he was certain. He can't be all that concerned with the difficulty in getting it, otherwise he wouldn't have bothered with that young one. Does he even have any talents? John Walker shrugged. No one's seen anything yet, he said. That didn't mean much. It had taken over a week for Briar to show his talents, after all. Brendan was debating whether or not to point that out, when a strange feeling came over him. The tugging, low in his belly, wasn't an entirely new experience. He'd felt it once before. 3 days earlier. The first time it happened, he hadn't been entirely sure what it was. It was odd, and he hadn't liked the feeling much at all, but he'd put it together easily enough. All he needed was to catch a familiar scent, to hear that familiar heartbeat. He hadn't expected the connection to be so strong, but then nothing ever went according to plan when it came to Ryan. It was different tonight. He sensed Ryan's presence, and the tugging in his stomach was nothing more than some soft, half-imagined sensation. Either the connection was getting stronger, or he'd somehow found himself more attuned to it. Without even looking, he knew Ryan was coming up from the left, moving slowly. Something was wrong with him. He wasn't quite himself. and Brendan desperately wanted to look up to see what was the matter. He was surrounded by other vampires, though, all of whom had been expressly told to drop all extracurricular activities. Ryan knew that. Brendan had told him that he needed to be away. So what was he playing at? Running into each other at the warehouse could be explained away as coincidence. It was a party, after all. But there was absolutely no reason for Ryan to be at the bridge. That meant Ryan had come looking for him, had somehow managed to track him down. Brendan was torn between annoyance at having been so easy to locate and pride that Ryan had managed to do it. Brendan waited until everyone's attention was absorbed in the discussion at hand and chanced to look over to where he knew Ryan was standing. The kid looked like hell. If Brendan thought he'd looked tired 3 days earlier, then there were no words to describe Ryan now. His eyes were dull and ringed in dark bruises. He was pale and very nearly swaying back and forth on his feet. If possible, he was even skinnier than before. Something was wrong. It had Ryan so desperate that he'd even come looking for Brendan, who he hadn't been all that happy with at their last parting. Brendan wanted to go to him, to get to the bottom of it all, and then force the boy to sleep for a couple of days. Instead, he met Ryan's eyes and shook his head. He tried to ignore the feeling that gnawed at him when Ryan visibly deflated and pressed a hand to his forehead. "It's for your good as well as mine," he tried to tell Ryan without words. It didn't work, and he finally forced his eyes back to Beckett. The club was packed when Ryan got there. He was surprised at that. It was a Friday, sure, but the only band playing was relatively unknown. The power of word of mouth was strong, though, and he supposed that someone had realized that the band was either incredibly good or spectacularly awful. Sometimes even a horrible show could be entertaining in its own way. Ryan didn't care one way or the other. The only thing that mattered was finding Brendan. 2 weeks ago, the thought of stalking a vampire, of demanding something from him, would have seemed laughable. All he'd wanted then was to be left alone. Maybe if the dreams hadn't started coming faster, hadn't gotten progressively worse, Ryan could have handled them on his own. The train yard was silent, except for the sound of their shoes. He was still groggy, confused as to what he was doing, where he was going. His teeth ached with the hunger that came from waking for the first time. "He shouldn't trust these people," a little voice in his head told him. They had taken something from him, but his thoughts were too fuzzy, and he couldn't figure out what was missing. It wasn't until he felt the hand between his shoulders, until he lost his balance and tumbled into the cattle car, that he remembered. The room was small. He could walk the perimeter in 34 steps. There was a bed in one corner, a low, narrow affair that he refused to lie in. It was cold and hard and didn't smell like him, not like his bed back home. He'd lost track of the days since they'd locked him in, pushing cups of partially congealed blood through a small opening in the door before slamming the passage shut again. His hands were still sore, the bones only partly healed from all the times he'd tried to break down the heavy metal door. He was still too young, too weak and improperly fed to have made much more than a few ugly dents. It didn't stop him from trying again, though. Not when he could hear movement in the hallway beyond his cell. He flew out the door, slamming his body against it. He paid no attention to the way his joints twisted his shoulder popping from its socket, his kneecap moving in the wrong direction. He clawed at the door hinges, kicked at the small food slot, screaming all the while. Let me out! Why am I here? What did I do? Like always, the footsteps beyond the door retreated, leaving him to slump to the ground with only the pain in his ruined body for company. He lay on the floor, running one fingertip through the accumulated dust, trying to write his name. He got as far as the first stroke of the first letter before giving up. His body hurt too much, and even those small movements made him whimper. He tried to count the days by the food he was given, but he was fairly certain that he wasn't fed with any sort of regularity. He still had no answers, and it would be so easy to give in to the despair, especially after the last time he'd put up a fight, managing to break most of the bones in his body as he thrashed against the door. He should have healed by now, but poor nutrition had him healing only slightly faster than a human. "I'll get home," he said softly to himself. "They'll send someone. Send them out in force and then they'll pay." He continued muttering to himself until, finally, pain and exhaustion pulled him under, and he slept. Ryan rubbed at his forehead, hoping the headache that had been a constant presence for the last several days would dissipate. He didn't know how long a person could go without sleep, but he thought he was about to find out. His body ached with tension, and his mind was fuzzy. Ryan stumbled as someone knocked into him, his reflexes dulled due to exhaustion. When he righted himself, he pressed the heels of his hands against his eyes, trying to focus his vision in the darkness of the club. His body felt heavy as he headed toward the first well-dressed man he saw, a dandy with two companions. Ryan was proud of the fact that he still had enough presence of mind to keep some distance between them. He hoped it would be enough to keep from looking obvious. As Ryan approached, he took in the way they stood together, the defensive set of their bodies and the defiant look in their eyes. It stopped him in his tracks. Ryan knew what trouble looked like, and the last thing he wanted to do was end up in the middle of a vampire brawl. He was trying to inch his way back through the crowd when a half-drunk girl stumbled into him, her elbow connecting painfully with his side. Ryan cried out, unable to stop his momentum as he was shoved back toward the vampires. The sound drew the attention of all three. Ryan froze as they looked him over, obviously sizing him up. The man with long black hair, the one who'd originally drawn Ryan's attention, regarded him with an amused little smile. "Dandy," he said with a laugh, after he'd taken a deep breath. "Are they sending human spies, then?" Ryan's foggy mind was in the middle of processing that, trying to connect it to Brendan's earlier warning, when the blonde vampire to his left abruptly turned to his brown-haired companion. "What's wrong, Mikey?" he asked. Ryan turned and found the vampire watching him with wide eyes and an open mouth. "Mikey?" the long-haired one asked sharply, in the tone that told Ryan clearly, foggy mind or no, but he was not a man accustomed to being denied. "Someone's coming," Brendan had said. Ryan felt his stomach drop. "Gerard, he's..." Mikey began, reaching out even though Ryan was nowhere near close enough to touch. "There's something... I can see..." "What can you see, Mikey?" Gerard asked eagerly. Ryan thought back to something Patrick had told him weeks ago, sitting in a coffee shop after their first meeting. Most vampires ended up with some kind of ability, something to set them apart from the rest. What could this dandy have seen when he looked at Ryan? He held his breath and clenched his fingers tightly around the overlong sleeves of his hoodie. He tried to stand straight, to hide how exhausted and unsteady he was, but couldn't help swaying a little. You need protection. Ryan hoped that whatever Brendan did would be enough, especially when Gerard began closing the scant distance between them. His hand was warm against Ryan's face as he tipped it back, looking him over with a critical eye. You need better keepers, he said. Gerard, would you mind returning dear Ryan to us? Ryan recognized the voice and found himself breathing a sigh of relief. Wherever Beckett was, Brendan wasn't far off. Ryan pulled his face away from Gerard's hand and looked over his shoulder. Sure enough, Brendan was there, along with the same vampires he'd seen at the bridge and the warehouse. Brendan's eyes were moving from Ryan to the other three dandies. Though that was his only reaction, it was enough to broadcast his discomfort. He doesn't belong to you, Mikey replied before Gerard could say anything. He was marked by that one. I can see it. He pointed at Brendan, and that was apparently enough to make up Brendan's mind as to the best course of action, because the vampire reached out and pulled Ryan back against him, out of Gerard's reach. It's blue, Mikey said softly, the comment intended solely for Gerard. Like a string that connects them. Gerard grinned. It wasn't a nice expression, and Ryan found himself trying to step backward. Only Brendan's grip on his wrist stopped him. Well, Beckett, it's been a while, Gerard said, once he finally turned away from Mikey. Though his attention was now focused on Beckett and his people, Gerard's hand was still on Mikey's neck. Yes, Beckett remarked. And you've forgotten your manners in the last 80 years, I see. You've been here nearly 2 weeks, and this is the first I've seen of you. What would Gabriel say? He'd be happy, I imagine, Gerard said. If it means I haven't ripped your city apart to find what I'm looking for. And finally, we're down to what matters, Beckett said. Ryan watched as he moved closer, motioning for his people to stay where they were. Ryan might have only been a human kid, one unfamiliar with vampire politics, but even he could sense the tension. He swayed again, and Brendan tugged him closer, letting him lean against his side. Why the fuck are you here, Gerard? Beckett asked, with a sigh of annoyance. Let me tell you a story, Gerard said. A short one, I hope. How's this for short? Frank Yarrow, Gerard said, with a small, malicious smile. He tilted his head to the side and waited for a reaction. What about him? Beckett asked carefully, his face blank, giving nothing away. Ryan thought that something about the measured tone of voice was more telling than anything else. For a dead man, he certainly gets around, Gerard said. He was in my city 2 weeks ago. And what do you know? He smelled an awful lot like one of your fledglings. So maybe you'd like to tell me a story now, about how much you seem to love taking from others? Ryan watched Beckett carefully, taking in the fury in his face and the controlled way that he breathed. Gerard didn't even seem fazed. I wasn't dumb enough to take your word for it when you told me the other hunters found out about me and him. I followed his scent, found where they'd taken him after I'd sent him home. There was certainly enough blood to suggest that he'd been beaten to death. There was a cruel tilt to Gerard's mouth when he paused, more than likely for effect than for breath. He wasn't dead when you found him, though, was he? You always said that you disposed of the body, but that isn't true. You turned him, Beckett, and I just don't understand why. Was it because I wouldn't have gotten there in time to do it? I could probably have accepted that, but instead you lied about it. You turned him and hid him. Why? He wasn't marked. I did nothing wrong, Beckett said. Try again, Gerard said, eyes flashing and voice very close to a snarl. They were fighting over a human boy, Ryan thought dizzily. 80 years and an entire feud over one kid. Ryan couldn't help but wonder what Brendan would have done if put in that situation. With the way he'd turned Ryan away the last few days, maybe it wouldn't have been such a big deal. Although, Brendan still hadn't let go of his wrist. So maybe Ryan had his answer. You brought it on yourself, Beckett snapped. He would have told all of our secrets, Gerard. Didn't you realize that? His family was smart. They knew he had information they could use. They were so very close to getting it, too. And then we all would have been dead in our sleep. But no, you didn't stop to think of that. He wasn't some nameless hunter. He was a fucking yarrow. Their lives are spent hunting us and doing nothing else. You should have seen how quickly they turned on your poor, sweet Frank. I've never seen such violence and hatred. It was beautiful. Gerard made to move forward, but the blonde's hand on his shoulder kept him in place. He settled for directing a particularly cold glare instead, his hands clenched into white-knuckled fists at his side. I pulled him out of there just before he could start talking. He thought I was taking him to you. I'm guessing it wasn't his brains that you found attractive, Beckett continued. Why didn't you just kill him? Gerard demanded. And waste such a beautiful boy? We do so like pretty things, Gerard. Don't even deny it. But I suppose I could pull together an actual reason if you'd like, Beckett said with a sweet smile. Began ticking off reasons on his fingers. I could say it was an issue of self-preservation. I could claim that I gave the boy a stake in our continued survival, a reason to keep his mouth shut about whatever you might have told him. I could even justify sending him away by pointing out the fact that there was no time to wean you of your obsession, that the decision had been made in a split second and the follow-through had to be equally quick. Leaving Frank in the city would have been the same thing as signing our own death warrants. If there's anything the Yarrows hate more than our kind, it's losing something that belongs to them. They would have come after us in force. Ryan's breath hissed in as he recognized the line, the similarities to the one of his dreams. Brendan tightened his grip on Ryan's wrist, telling him without words to stay silent and inconspicuous. I could say all of those things, Beckett continued. But you know, none of it is entirely true, Gerard, Beckett said, with a fake look of sadness. Do you want to hear the whole truth? I did it to spite you. Your stupid obsession with a family you'd been warned away from had nearly toppled everything I worked so hard for. You aren't even from this city. Yet you came here and had no respect for rules that were put in place long before either of us even existed. You were supposed to be representing Gabriel's interests, and instead, you thumbed your nose at your duties and spent your time seducing a boy. And then you were too stupid to claim him. Beckett laughed. So yes, Gerard, I took your boy. And then I sent him away.
Where?
Gerard demanded, his voice flat. Away, Beckett repeated.
If you don't want to tell me, then don't. But know that I am not leaving until you do. I'll find him, Beckett,
Gerard promised. Good luck with that, Beckett said. Because the last thing I'm going to do is help you. Gerard just smiled.
The hard way it is, he said.
He nodded to the others, and they followed closely behind as Gerard made his way toward the exit. Mikey craned his neck to stare back at Ryan and Brendan.
Not one word,
Beckett snapped, when the others had disappeared outside. He glared at Carden, who looked as though he were about to say something.
We're going home. Brendan?
Beckett fixed the younger vampire with a look, taking in the fingers still wrapped around Ryan's wrist and the way the boy was leaning against Brendan's side.
You have an hour. That's it.
With that, Beckett led the others outside, pushing the humans roughly out of the way with no regard for the possibility of broken bones.